You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Another world, another time, in the age of wonder.
There was once a dream. You could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, and it would vanish.
A battle between good and evil.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Where shall I find a new adversary so close to my own level?
Try the local sewer.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
The Avengers, Earth's mightiest heroes.
Peace means having a bigger stick than the other guy.
One of these days, I'm gonna have a stick of my own.
I'm Groot.
Welcome to the Neverland Podcast. The podcast for lovers of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
Please welcome your host, Jeremy.
I thought he'd be taller.
Yeah, I can fly.
All it takes is faith. Trust.
Well, if it isn't the Star Spangled Man with a plan, what is your plan today?
Up to Neverland!
Take your pixie out of your pockets, Neverlanders. Sprinkle some of that pixie dust around, think your happiest thought, and let's fly away to Neverland, because at least we know we can get there without wrinkling anything up and getting put on strange planets that we have no idea where we are.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure. Huh? I'm usually pretty good at getting where I want to go. Pixie dust does kind of do the job. Might not be as fast sometimes. Well, sometimes it's as fast as hitting play on your phone, but we get there. But I, of course, not alone. Eric's not with me. Eric, his voice was kind of bad the other night, and so we're going to leave him alone. Let him recover for next week, but we brought the Pixie Heather.
Hi.
Well, actually, I guess we call you the Wendy Nerd.
Wendy Nerd, yep.
Yeah, and the jingling you're hearing in the background is there's a cat in studio that cries when we're not one of us in the room with her. So she's making noise.
She's quite the princess.
So we're, yeah, a spoiled little princess. Well, we called our cat Allura from the Princess and Voltron. So, yeah, she is a spoiled little princess. She rules her little catdom and makes noise and racket. But we're going to have some fun today. We're going to basically talk about Disney's latest release, A Wrinkle in Time. And then also I'll be joined by The Real Brian from The Real Brian Show in a look back at how Walt would make a movie and compare that to the modern Disney film and a lot of film in general. And it's a very interesting discussion, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. We talked for over an hour. I've tried to condense it, but it's a really good conversation, and you might be thinking some of the same things that we are thinking, and I think we're going to continue this type of discussion with some other people at a later time. But for now, let's talk about A Wrinkle in Time.
There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring do and stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a movie!
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie!
Starring everybody
and me!
Boy, I wish I were you people seeing this for the first time!
Kermit, I got a great picture of the chicken!
Oh, good!
Okay, so we just came out of that yesterday.
Yep.
And I kind of gave you a task. I bought a copy of the book, and you've read it before, and I thought, well, maybe you can get a chance to read through it.
It had been a long time since I'd read the book, and this honestly was probably my first science fiction book that I had ever read. I can't remember reading anything like it before. And so I remember as a kid being kind of confused. And after rereading a few chapters of the book, there is a little bit that is confusing if you were maybe a child reading the book. And that is written,
and it was aimed for children.
It was aimed for children.
Yeah.
But I think being adults reading it or young adults reading it, I think you probably would catch on to some of the nuances. Kids that read it, I think, will just enjoy just the trip, just the fun trip, because that is the way that it is written. It's an adventure between three children. Two of them are siblings, and one is a friend, a new friend that is coming along for the ride. And so they have an incredible journey through time and space.
Well, not through time, just space.
Well,
although in the film, it did seem like that. I don't want to spoil anything, but it does seem like they came back and not a lot of time seems to have passed.
Yes, yes. There is that element where
they might have Doctor Who'd their whole way through the whole thing.
Yeah, well, and you kind of get that before they take off that, you know, the misses are just like, oh, don't worry about, you know, anything. And I wondered, well, they're probably going to transport right back. And then when they have a conversation, there's a conversation later on with the father, and he doesn't realize how much time has passed. In the
yeah,
place that they
that
end
came
up
across
at.
In the movie.
So I think there really is something there about it, when you're crossing through the galaxy, that time doesn't equate to what's going on Earth.
Yeah, so there is a bit of a difference. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'm hoping the book explains better, that's one. It's a minor problem because if you don't think about it when watching the movie, you're fine with this. But they never explain how they're. I want to say tesseract, and they do mention a tesseract.
Yes.
We never got to see an object that would be a tesseract, but they say, "Oh, the tesseract is real." But they tesser when they travel, and they never explained how they do that, other than you get the frequency that you're finding for the right vibration to go is love. We have that statement, but So what does that mean? If you love, you can suddenly blink your eyes and be somewhere else. They never explain it, but when you watch the film, you don't really need them to. Mm-hmm. If you just kind of relax and go with it, and they have a lot of nice things to say and a lot of really good encouraging things, I think, in the
it's
story.
A very positive movie.
Oh, and I love how colorful.
Positive.
So colorful. I've missed that in a lot of films. You know, we've gotten so dark, dreary, and dank. And this one, you know, it has its times where it is darker and scary because that's what it needs to be for
but
the story.
But where it's appropriate. It's not dark perpetually like some movies that have come. That seems to be the thing, that everything has to be dark and grim. And that's the style now. And it gets old, especially if you're trying to do children's books. They should not be that way. That's just kind of my opinion. Like if you're doing children's books, they should be bright and colorful.
Yeah, and beautiful. To look
at. Children's book. Yeah.
This is the way I wish the Alice in Wonderland movies had been.
Well, I don't think those were necessarily aimed towards children, to be real honest. The new ones. You know, the Disney cartoon.
But maybe they should have been, because there's a kid
was.
In all of us. That's what Walt would say.
Well, yes.
Adults are just grown children.
Well, and I like...
And I like some color. And Wonderland should have been bright, because when you get your first planet, and this is beautiful, and the flowers are alive and interactive.
I love that. Yep.
This is what I was sitting there going, this is what, you know, what the animated version of Wonderland, if I was seeing a live action version of that, I would want the flowers and the sing their little song in the golden afternoon. Mm-hmm. That's what I would have wanted. So, I mean, I love the look of this movie.
Yes, this movie has a lot of spectacle to it.
Big time.
Which is wonderful, but it's not too much. There's also a trend that because it is computer animated, we can shove as much stuff in the background. But then it confuses me. Like I have a hard time following what's going on because there's so much distraction. But that's not the case here. You get the feeling that you have a very open world. It's a very colorful world, that there are not just one world, but there are multiple worlds.
Yeah, we get
worlds.
Into other places too.
Yes, that it's possible to go to other very interesting, neat places. And the process of tessering, if you will, is actually a very beautiful one. But the person that you're following, your antagonist that you're following through Meg, she has...
That'd be a protagonist.
Protagonist. Mm-hmm. Sorry. That she has some problems with that at the beginning, but that has to do with her personal journey.
Yeah.
But when she finally grows to the place where she realizes how much how special she is and how wonderful, you know, that process can be. She really does have a good time. And you do see the way Tessering probably, it should be, you know, that is a positive thing.
And what's nice about it is by her learning, and I don't think we're spoiling anything, but we're just telling you some of the nice positive things. Mm-hmm. Her learning that she is special is our own way of learning how we are all in our own way special.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some spiritual aspects in this, and I'm going to dive into it a little bit. I mean, I don't know how much is this intention, but it did remind me. I listened to another podcast called The Daily Audio Bible, where you get, you know, a section of the Bible every day. You should go check it out. It's very good. But there's usually a theme for every year that we go through the Bible in a year. And this year's theme, Brian has set us up with identity. And I'm going to dive spiritual. So if you don't like this, well, then ignore me for a second. But I think you'll still get something out of what I'm going to say. Yeah. But when you look at parts of the Bible, we have an identity as God having created us for these wonderful things and has rigged everything in your life just for your placement of when you're going to come in, the exact time, the place. God has intention and purpose and beautiful things for you, but we have an enemy who steals that identity away and brings you nothing but negativity and anger and bitterness, and that was pain. A big theme, pain. But that's what this film did. You have all this bad feelings that had gotten into Megan, so she wasn't able to tap into who she was supposed to be. And we get a really nice sequence when we meet the villain, who's this the most evil mind ever. And just they call it the It, which I took him. That is the devil incarnate, because he was a deceiver and liar. We get to see him in different forms. But its sole goal was to take away that specialness and to bring bitterness and everything. And there's a really nice sequence, and I hope I'm not spoiling anything, where we get to see that some of the, you know, where everything looks okay, we get to see some of the bad things that have happened because of the It and how we get these negative thoughts. And even the bully Veronica, we get to see what part of her problem is and some of the lies been told that she has believed in herself. And we never really, you know, it's not like you have a person who's lying to you, but the it lies to everybody and shows them how you're not special or how you're not as good as you think you are.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that get put in the movie. From the book, we definitely get the idea that Meg has a hard time at school, that there are bullies, and that she is very aggressive because of the frustration with her dad being gone and that kind of thing. And that's really the part of it. Like, she has been hurt because of this. And you get this thing, I couldn't help but think of hurt people.
Yeah, and people that come and hurt other people.
Yes, to make themselves, like, feel better. And you definitely get that as, like, I mean, we have a big thing in our society about bullying and how bad it is, but I don't know how much time we spend on what is happening with the bully, because kids don't wake up one morning and just decide, I'm going to start persecuting other children. There's something that goes on behind the scenes. And so you kind of see that. Now, that's not in the book, but it's a good add-in. It's a nice thing in the movie that helped to kind of come back. And it's part of the things that I think
gave it a good message,
helped us to see Meg's growth through it all. You also have, Calvin. Okay. So Calvin is another hurt person, if you will. You know, situation at home is not that great, but he instead of hurting other people, he seeks to please. He seeks to try to...
Everybody tries to compensate in some fashion for the hurt.
And but he really uses some of that to encourage Meg, you know, even though he has this downside, he feels like, you know, I don't know, it's just different than the way he responds to the hurt. Instead of being a bully and trying to put other people down, he then tries
to... You might be telling too much of the movie.
You think so?
Yes. I worry you're going too much. Because I want to be careful. I don't want to spoil it because people haven't seen it yet. But, I mean, yes, there's some good, some interesting characters, and I think there's some lessons. I don't feel like they beat us over the head with it.
Mm-mm.
But they just visually show us a few things to where we want to think of things. And what you were saying with bullies, that Real Brian, who's coming on later, he has actually a thing where he's talking about when somebody seems to have a bad attitude with you, like you encounter somebody and they just seem like they're being rude. Maybe take a second and stop and ask them, hey, are you okay?
Yeah.
Because maybe there is something. And I, this actually reminds me, a little side story. I actually was just reading a thing on Facebook with, you know, because we're all still reeling. I mean, the school shootings and stuff that keeps happening. And but a teacher who wrote this as an open letter to students, and it's become a viral thing. And he's going through, in order to really stop these school shootings, the students can change it. Take a look around. Who is that kid by themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Who nobody seems to think much of. Hey, go try to make a friend. And it may be difficult because that person may have been lonely and hurt by so many people that they kind of act out of bitterness a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it may be a challenge for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if those people could have a friend, who's that person sitting alone in the lunchroom or in the classroom? Because those are potential active shooters. You know, we're not saying that everyone's going to be that way, but that's somebody who's got enough hurt and anger that maybe that's what could happen.
That seems a common thread with the shooters that come into schools, especially if they are students themselves, is that something has happened. They are not accepted, you know,
in some fashion.
And there's been some negative things that have happened at school. And that's why they are lashing out at that. This also another thing that I'd seen a video, and this has been out there a long time ago, a student who decided to make a video of people that she thought were beautiful. And these were people that she hadn't told that they were beautiful, but she came around with the camera to see the reaction when she had told them.
Oh, I remember that.
You know, you are beautiful. And the one thing that sticks in my mind was this one girl. She was very beautiful, but when she told her that, she got very aggressive. Like, she could not believe that someone could honestly just tell her that she was beautiful without wanting something in return, without trying to be, you know, like, this is a cruel joke or whatever. Just, she could not accept the fact that someone would think that she was beautiful.
And people get like that, where they can't, either they don't believe you when you, because, mm-hmm. and they dealt with this in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I kind of want to wrap this up. I just want to drop in there. I think one of the important themes, and I want to go ahead and share it, even though this might be a slight spoiler, but I love the fact that the message they try to give you is your flaws are your flaws. But despite you having flaws, you are loved.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry about your flaws. They're part of what makes you, and you are beautiful, and somebody loves you. And if you don't feel like you're loved, that's very sad. And so, you know what? There might be people out there. If you know somebody who maybe doesn't think they're loved, go love that person.
Well, and I'd heard something.
And if you feel like you're not being loved, find somebody who loves you, because your parents should love you. Somebody loves you.
Yeah.
But
there was a little saying that I'm not sure where I picked it up. It probably was online somewhere about, you know, if you can compliment someone, do it.
Yeah.
Like, if you can say some nice things to someone to brighten their day, then go ahead and do it. Don't waste time on it. Don't be embarrassed. And that's something, you know, I mean.
Pixie dust.
Yeah.
That's what we do. Know, we pixie dust. Handshake and a smile.
Mm-hmm.
Hug if they're okay with that.
So one other.
Show a little love to somebody.
One other thing that I want to kind of throw in there. If you have not read the book and you go see the movie, go and read the book. Okay. There are some things that they did change in the movie.
No twins, apparently.
Yeah, there are no twins in the book. If you are a real big fan of the book, you will notice that there are some changes. And I don't know. I liked the diversity of the cultural and ethnic, you know, background of who they chose to portray.
And I love the adopted family.
And I love
the
adopted.
The way they treat that.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a good. And all that kid is so adorable.
Oh, well, all the kids I thought were really adorable
and so
acted
good.
Really,
yes.
Really well. But the book is very much written with Caucasian people involved. I mean, there are people that
I think it was written to be English the way you're talking about
red hair and blonde. Yeah, I don't know if Madeline Lingle, like where, if she's from England or whatever, or, you know, United States, but there does seem to be in here, it seems to be set in a, you know, maybe England or Europe or, you know, maybe Eastern United States, where there are older houses and you know, that kind of mystery part of it. So there's a few setting things and a few liberties they took with the background of some of them, but it doesn't take anything away from the story, and it does either book or the movie. I think if you want a good movie to go take your kids to, that you're going to feel good about taking them to, and they're going to have a good time, and it's going to be a positive experience for everybody, this is the movie.
Yeah, and it will remind you to, hey, love people, because there are people out there who really just are focused on their faults, that they need to know that they're loved. And I want to tell you are loved I'm going to go jump spiritual again. I promise you, God loves you. Even if you don't believe in him, he still loves you. Okay. So, and I tell you what, if you need to just hear something nice, feel free to send me an email. I love all of you. I love that you're listening to this and you do this every week. And so if you need to feel loved, I will do my darndest through electronic communication to just make you sure that you know you are loved and you are special and you are unique and you were put on this earth for a reason. And don't let people lie to you that say that you are worthless. You are have value. And this movie will help you see, hopefully, your values, because I liked this movie. It's not something you're supposed to think about, the technical stuff. This is more about reminding you that you are loved and that you need to love other people.
It is very much about the relationships.
Yes. And it was such a great family dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because I get tired. They're bringing Roseanne back. I don't want Roseanne back. That showed you a bad, negative family and tried to make light of it. It's funny. It's like, no, this is a really screwed up family. And I know some people have some bad family elements, but shouldn't we have some role model families to look at to say, yeah, our family has some flaws, but we love each other and we have some positivity. Because I love the relationship between, you know, adopted brother and sister. There's mm-hmm. a real love in there. I mean, this is the type of thing we need to see an example of how we should treat each other in our family. But we've gone on a lot longer than I expected.
I know.
But
yeah.
There's just so many nice things to say about I didn't feel like it was preachy at all. And we're going to talk about this with Brian and I. You're going to hear this. But it didn't feel preachy. It just felt affirmative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good stuff. Which I think, you know, Tomorrowland, I think, tried to do that. But somehow or another, Tomorrowland didn't quite get the same vibe of what I think they were trying to do with innovation or whatever. Somehow or another, that one fell flat. This one, to me, didn't fall flat.
Mm-hmm.
It was very uplifting, and it's a good reminder.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, okay. I think I've been repeating myself. So
yeah.
we are going to have a trailer park a little bit. You're going to hear, when I talk to Brian, we're going to talk about this new Christopher Robin teaser.
Yay, it's Pooh.
It's Pooh.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, pause this podcast right now. Go look it up on YouTube because I was delighted when Pooh showed up, I got to say. But we'll talk about that a little bit here with Brian, which let's just dive right in because it's a good long conversation.
To Disney and beyond.
Okay, so we're going to do something a little bit different. We haven't done this in a while and had a panel of people to talk about some things. Although right now the panel of people, we just have two of us right now because poor Eric is not feeling well right now. And from the real Brian show, we have the fake Brian. No, I'm kidding. It's the real Brian.
I try to be as fake as, no, real as possible.
What I thought would be interesting, and this was inspired actually by somebody's YouTube video, and it looks like they'd put a lot of effort in, and they really compared what the modern Disney animation and even live action studio has been doing compared to what we would call Walt's way of doing things, and actually took a look at the fact that there is, you know, Walt's era compared to, you know, the Renaissance of the 90s and what many people are calling the new Renaissance with, you know, Tangled and Frozen and Wreck-It Ralph and the new caliber of Disney films. And really looking at the difference now, not necessarily saying that anything that's newer is not good movies necessarily, but that there's definitely something missing. And so I thought it would be interesting to talk about some of these differences. So now, Brian, you're not like technically a Disney fan, but you do enjoy some of the classic Disney films.
I'm a fan of, like, you know, Disney classic live action kind of stuff. Maybe some of the animated from, you know, way, way back yonder. But no, not as much of a fan of the modern animated by any means. Although Disney has acquired so many different things, you know, I'm a Marvel fan, I'm a Star Wars fan, stuff like that. So a lot of the acquisitions that they have, definitely fans of stuff like that. I guess we could even go to like Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
So, well, that's a whole new genre of films that they've really, you know, based on their attractions. I mean, we've got Jungle Cruise coming up now.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something that Disney has always done, is been able to base their films off of something that already exists in a way. They've typically done, you know, fairy tales or various books. And I do see Disney is continuing to do that with, you know, A Wrinkle in Time even coming out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, finding the right stories. Disney has been very good about that. Walt spent a lot of time trying to acquire the rights to anything that he could. And even at one point was trying to get the rights to the Wizard of Oz series so that he could, you know, make those films. But he didn't get the rights. And Wizard of Oz, of course, made by somebody else. But MGM did a great job of it. So, I mean, that's kind of how Disney has operated. And so it is, it kind of still fits that they're using the park attractions as like an established thing to say, hey, you know, we can make films based off of that. So
I look back at some of the, you know, the live actions that I liked, and I think two of my absolute favorite Disney movies, well, actually I'm going to go even three, because my third one's a little cheesy, but two of my favorites were Swiss Family Robinson, which they didn't write, you know, what was that? Johann David Wyss or Wyss or however you pronounce his last name.
Something like that.
Yeah. And then of course, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And that was Jules Verne. But I did like Last Flight of Noah's Ark. Do you remember that one?
Actually, I've never heard of that one.
Oh, that's such a cheese ball movie, but it's awesome. Beautiful. See, I like stuff like that.
The old live action stuff.
Yeah, but they didn't write it. That's the thing. I mean, they adapted it, which again, maybe.
Right.
So yeah, that actually probably brings up even another discussion point going into this, is the adapt, you know, the adapted movies versus what they actually wrote and created.
Which, you know, a lot of times they adapt, they Disney-fy it.
Sure.
In a lot of ways. I mean, when you look at Frozen, it is supposed to be based off Hans Christian Andersen's The Snow Queen, but it doesn't bear any resemblance to it whatsoever.
Yeah.
So that's almost more of a Disney original. And even stuff that we consider Disney originals usually has a basis in something. I mean, Wreck-It Ralph is pretty much a Disney original story, but it really borrows heavily from a lot of those games that we loved in the 80s and, you know, helps make it more fun. Sort of like Ready Player One is going to be. You know, part of the fun of that is all the Easter eggs and references to all these great games, movies, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So Wreck-It Ralph set the stage for Ready Player One to be made. That's what it did.
That's great, because the book of, you know, Ready Player One book was awesome, but I did also like Wreck-It Ralph. So there you go. There's a modern animated that I love, but I like video games. So there you go.
Yeah. So it taps into that. So there is a bit more. I think Disney is trying to create some of their own stuff, but most of the, you know, the bread and butter is adapting fairy tales or some, you know, books. You know, a lot of our fairy tales were from some sort of a book, you know, some older books, some classics and stuff like that. But the detail that we get into is how the film was made, you know, compared to how Walt would do it and his idea and concept for how he wanted to tell a story compared to how they try to tell stories now. And this could be maybe the guilt of, you know, or just the way of how we modernly tell a story. We have different expectations from film now, which, you know, you could say Disney might be keeping up with the times, especially with a lot of, you know, everything's about social justice these days.
Yeah.
And Disney's definitely been following that. Even Black Panther, which is still a great film, even though we completely understand the subtext of the film, we understand what they're trying to say. They had to take that time to give us some platitudes and preach the message to us.
Yeah.
Which is something a lot, I don't know if a lot of other films are guilty of it, but this is something I think the modern era of Disney is becoming guilty of, considering Zootopia, which instead of subtext, they just hammer you over the head. You know, you're doing fine, you know, good movies. Then all of a sudden they have to make their point. And you have that scene there with our two lead characters where it's like the, oh, huh, we're about racism. Ha ha. You've stereotyped the fox, haven't you?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the movie dropped for me at that moment. I still enjoy that movie, but that's a problem I'm seeing with the modern. Watching this film and going into more of those classic animated films, like I think you've mentioned you really liked Pinocchio, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen, you know, the original animated, but yes, I did enjoy that.
But when you take something like Pinocchio, there is a subtext just visually. Mm-hmm. They don't have to rely on dialogue. But when you have the, you know, because it's a morality tale, really. It's a fable of you've got a clean slate character who's thrown out into the world, who has to now learn a morality by his encounters that he has with all the various characters. And in one bit there, when he's taken away by this guy who basically occasionally even has devilish features, he's taken away and told he can do all these bad things without any repercussions. And so you got Pinocchio who's trying, you know, oh, he's smoking and drinking and destroying things. You know, you see all these boys causing all this chaos, when eventually they turn into, they make asses of themselves. That's pretty much what it is. And are now going to be taken away to a salt mine underground. And there's some allegory there of, you know, the devil basically telling you, oh, you get to do whatever you want and there won't be any consequences, but eventually you lose, are stripped of all of your humanity and are taken to hell. You know, there's yeah. this allegorical thing, but it's subtext. They didn't have to come out and no one has to comment on it.
Yeah.
It's just there and you understood it. And it's great cinematography. But in like these newer films, and that might be why you haven't been able to enjoy some of these newer animation.
I would definitely say that that is a huge part of it is but it's not just Disney animation. I mean, you know, as you know, I used to do Arrow Squad and Arrow and all those DC shows right now are cramming agendas down people's throats too. And
woo!
Yeah. And
we
so
can preach on that.
And I can't even honestly, like I can't even watch those shows anymore because of that. So yeah, that's a very big factor for me because you're right. If there's a subtext or if there's some suggestions, like here's what's going on. I mean, take for example, this is always a classic comparison. Dances with Wolves was a very clear agenda, but they didn't cram it down your throat like
yeah.
they did with Avatar.
I didn't even watch that one.
So, I mean, but that's the thing. You've got this, you're right. It's like this modern era. They assume that people maybe aren't smart enough, I guess, to read between the lines. So now they need to like stop the film and like they look at the camera and they're telling you, okay, viewer, let me tell you what we're doing here. It's like, it's almost that bad. And you're going, no, it's mm-hmm. really not. Like you don't need to tell us. I think, I don't think this was Disney. Who did Kubo?
Kubo. That was, I always say it wrong. Like, completely different animation company. They okay. did stuff. I think they did like Coraline, the yeah. Box Trolls.
Okay. Well, there's something in there.
Oh my gosh, they're brilliant.
They are, but they did do one thing in there, and the only reason I remember this is because I, for some reason, all of the Cinemarks now are showing the same previews over and over and over. So I saw that preview so many times that scene just got like nagged in my head, and that's the only reason I can remember this. But I know that Disney movies are doing this too. So it's the idea where a joke happens, they say something that's a phenomenal joke, and then they stop and they try, then they explain it to you. And you're like, no. You just killed it. You can't explain the joke. Yeah, there's no reason for that. So they did that in that movie at one point, and I thought, you know, there's definitely I don't know if it's called the dumbing down of the audience or I don't know. It's like you're right though. It's less of the let's let the viewer just kind of interpret it and figure it out and enter it, you know, in their own way. Now we're telling you, this is how we want you to watch it. This is what we want you to take from it. This is how we want you to laugh. This is, you know, we're going to explain the joke now. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a Disney thing, but that is definitely something I see.
Yeah. So that's why I think Disney might be guilty of just being a modern film company.
Yeah.
And again, that was part of the fun of going to a movie used to be discussing it. Oh, did you kind of think about that? You know, a movie, if you're going to, especially if you're going to have a message to the movie, you're maybe trying to tell a morality tale. Something you can actually discuss later and not, oh, well, they obviously said that. Yep. That's what they said. But something you could actually talk about like, oh, yeah, I kind of thought this when they said that. Oh, you know, that's interesting. You can't have these discussions as well anymore because now it's dropped in your lap.
Yeah. Well, I know we just discussed Black Panther on the Real Brian Show. And one thing that, you know, we took race out of it because that is definitely a very strong theme right now with that whole movie is that black people are featured as the heroes, as the main characters. Awesome. That is phenomenal. What we did is we said, let's take, you know, the quote race sort of thing, just move it aside for a second and let's just look at the story. Let's just look mm-hmm. at the movie itself. And we were actually a little disappointed that it was fine. The movie was fine. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't phenomenal either. And I thought, you know, for a movie that is doing so many good things, I thought the story was just kind of average. I felt like it was just another pumped out thing, kind of like you're talking about. There's so much going on. There's the modern movie factory kind of feel. And it's just like, there could have been so much more in that movie. You know, from an origin standpoint, from, you know, cause you, I don't know if you thought this, but when we saw Captain America Civil War, for me personally, I always went, man, I want to know more about Black Panther. And I know other people were saying similar things like, oh, he seems cool. I want to know more about him. So then when you hear that there's going to be a Black Panther movie, everybody's excited. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. And the origin story for me was good, but it wasn't like, wow. It was just like, huh, okay. Yeah, it's another Marvel movie.
Yep. And it's a good Marvel movie.
It is.
But it's the way the critics treated it before it came out, it's like everybody was afraid to say anything bad about it because everybody treated it like it was this great cultural phenomenon. When really, I'm like, okay, we saw Blade movies. I don't know, Beverly Hills Cop. We've had some great black heroes. That's before, true. You know, so it wasn't really to me that culturally significant. It was another Marvel film that I was excited for, and I very much enjoyed it. But I was expecting the way they treated it. This should have been Lord of the Rings when I went into
it. Yeah.
But it was a good movie. I did have a great time, and I did like that. I don't think they pounded this message in there, but I did like that you did see that playing the blame game or carrying the bitterness because your ancestors had a, you know, things were done, definitely done wrong, but hanging on to that bitterness and turning that into hate is just going to cause destruction. Mm-hmm. That message was definitely there. I don't think they pounded that one in your face,
no,
but it was definitely there. You could see it in Killmonger because you could understand it, could relate to that character. Well done, Michael B. Jordan, I must say. He was really great with that character.
Yeah, and I honestly do laugh at that because the irony of what you just said there is that here's a Disney movie, although it's Marvel, they didn't pound the message in your face. And that's exactly what we're talking about is movies, modern movies are pounding it in your face, and they actually didn't. The reviewers and the critics are pounding the message in people's faces, but the movie itself actually didn't. And I've even heard people do reviews and critics on, here's what the movie was saying. And it's like, well, no, actually, it didn't say that. They actually had a really good message, and it was a very, I mean, like at the end, well, I don't want to give too much away, but it went from being prideful to humble and to generous. And that's an amazing message. And that's not what people are entirely interpreting. It's interesting.
Yep. And now some of the ways that, and this is where I'm going to get into that Walt era. Walt, and I'm studying cinematography right now.
Nice.
There are so many ways how you move the camera, how you color correct, you know, all these things you can do with the image alone, you can convey such emotions. And Walt, when he was telling a story, when he was, you know, we were making these grand animated films at the time, he wasn't thinking, I'm making kids movies. He was thinking, I am making movies to compete with some of the great films that are out there.
Nice.
He borrowed from German Expressionism, some of the horror things. He wanted to make sure the Evil Queen of Snow White was just as frightening as Dracula.
Yeah.
And when you look at the way he tells story, the visualization of it is up to par with any movie at that time, and even better than some of the modern movies of just visually telling the story. And then even in the YouTube video that inspired this conversation, they compared the fight in Bambi between with the rival for Feline versus the Lion King.
Yeah.
And in Bambi, you know, Lion King, okay, you get to see it and it's slow motion and there's fire and it looks cool. And I still like the Lion King, but Bambi, they decided, you know what, to make it scary and intense. You see shapes with just different colors of light reflecting on the bodies of Bambi and the villain character.
Yeah.
And it's just streaks of like red and blue, and it's fast moving. And the music, well, and the Lion King, it's a beautiful music. I do love Hans Zimmer, but it doesn't help tell the story other than being background.
Hmm.
In Walt's time, he made that music. It's almost like a ballet or a symphony. The music is keeping pace with the action, and as people would like to say about John Williams is good at telling you how to feel. That's why we love John Williams, because he does put that emotion in there.
Yeah,
and that's what some of the old music, especially Bambi, the music is so brilliant, and you have such great sequences like that fight, like the April showers, and you've got choreographed raindrops that follows everything. I mean, the entire sound of a storm is music. You don't actually have, you know, you hear the wind through the voices. And I mean, that is, wow, I don't have a word for it. But see, that's the way Walt would do it. He would tell such a story. And they even coined the term Mickey Mousing, where the action matched the music so well that it was like they were animating to the music, which is why Fantasia worked, because it was pretty much, oh, we know how to do this because we've done Bambi and Pinocchio and all these other films. And so now we can actually take a symphony and animate to a symphony. And it was brilliant. It was experimental. It's hard to watch because it's long. It can be boring. But that's something when these modern movies that are, you know, Disney's became musicals, like a modern musical, which is still good, but they lost something of that music telling the story in the background, and that cinematography, the more they rely upon a computer, some of that cinematography has kind of gone by the wayside.
Yeah.
Which was where that subtext would be in the cinematography. But okay, so I've been a long go ahead and respond to that one. I kind of went on for a long time.
No, I completely agree with you, and it's interesting because it was interesting hearing from that perspective, because I think the you know, just as a layman viewer, you know, who doesn't know all of the ins and outs of that, I see that, right? So I see some of those old stories told, and you feel like, you know, it's so funny that you mentioned the Bambi scene, because the Bambi scene for me, I mean, granted, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I do remember being almost traumatically affected by it versus Lion King was like, okay, you know what I mean? It was cool. Yeah. And it was a little like sad at times, but you know, I was not affected to the level even close to what I was by that Bambi scene. So especially I'm glad you brought that
Bambi's
up.
Bambi's mother.
Oh my gosh. I know. I mean, it's like
that literally traumatized children.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Lion King, I don't think anybody was traumatized when Mufasa died.
Well, you don't want to traumatize people today.
Oh, of course.
We got to be safe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Wasn't Old Yeller Disney?
Yes, and I can't watch that one because I know how it ends.
Exactly. How many people are traumatized by that?
Yes.
Oh, they just,
And even Dumbo, one of my favorites, but it's one of the hardest scenes to watch. The baby mind sequence. Yeah. If you can keep from crying during that, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right about that. And I think it is interesting when you can create the whole, you're right. What is that word? I mean, it's like a full on masterpiece basically, but it's like when you've got the synergy and the choreography between the music and the visuals and everything that's going on, that is unbelievable. You're taking people on an emotional experience at that point. You know, it's not just you're showing them something. You're actually inviting them to join you in the experience, in the story, and live it with them.
Yeah.
Is essentially
what
he
did. Which is impressive for being a drawing on paper.
Yeah.
You're taking this as real and feeling emotions about a character that is completely fake.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why, you know, when they were making Snow White, they were calling it Walt's Folly. But Walt was determined to say, I'm going to make the most believable, real characters I can on 2D. And he knew for that first screening when they open up there and the dwarves are all crying around Snow White laying in her sleep. They're thinking dead. He heard people cry in the audience and he knew, I've got them. They've bought into this. This drawing has become real characters to them.
Okay, so you just brought up a point that I know that really bothers me personally about modern day, especially, well, let's say modern day animated especially, but this goes with Disney movies and stuff too. You just said that what Walt would do was create realism. He would compete with the great classics, with the, you know, the actual things that were going on in that time. He wasn't trying to create a kid's movie. And so when you start to do that, when you're competing with the greats, when you're looking to bring emotion and realism and everything into it, you know, you feel like this isn't animated anymore. You feel like these are real people. The problem with modern day animation, and I don't know why this is, I've even talked to various voice actors and actresses about this. Why are the characters so overdramatic in today's animated? I mean, so overdramatic that it's like these characters aren't even remotely believable. They're like vocal inflections don't match what's going on half the time.
Yeah.
And I was asking one voice actress and she was even saying, you know, she wasn't entirely sure why they did that. But her theory is that, you know, they don't allow themselves to immerse into the character. And a lot of actors and actresses will do that. But if you're pushing them out too fast, you never have that time. Here's a case in point. The game Destiny 2. Your companion is called, you know, the Ghost and all that. And they had Peter Dinklage, you know, who's been in a number of things, most famously now Game of Thrones. They had him do the voice. Well, he's a big actor, right? It's going to be amazing. Well, he never really put his heart into it. He seemed kind of eh. And so I would say not even a year later, they actually replaced him with a whole nother voice actor who I think did a phenomenal job. They replaced Peter Dinklage because he sucked. I mean, let's just, he wasn't in it. He didn't care. And so, you know, thank goodness that Destiny 2 did that. But I think it's interesting, you know, when you've got these people who are doing these things and you're going, oh my gosh, like I would tell you, and I know Peter Rabbit wasn't Disney. I had no desire to see Peter Rabbit because I was watching the voice animations and I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's just, and not part of that thing.
Problem you have people who they focus on voice and their voice talent, and they can bring such great character in just their voice. And then you have people who are movie stars, and we're used to seeing them in live action.
Yeah.
And to bring in the money, they will cast these movie stars, these big names, in to do voice work, and not all of them can really change their style of acting, because it's a completely different way to act.
It's not the same thing, and that's not what they're, like you said, they're not great at that. The video game voice actors, they're the people you need to hire, because they know how to create. There's one guy I can tell you right now that does all kinds of different things. In fact, he does on Star Wars Rebels, Steve Bloom on Star Wars Rebels, he does Zeb. Well, you also play Guild Wars 2.
I mainly play the first one. I think the second one I haven't dove in.
So in Guild Wars 2, he also does the Char Ritlock, and he sounds nothing alike. I had to honestly say, who is this guy? This guy's really good. And I'm like, wait a minute, Steve, that's the same guy that does Zeb. And no way. There's no way it's the same guy, because he's that good. Now, granted, they probably adjusted his voice a little bit. But when you see voice actors who can go around and change their voice and do amazing different. See, those are the people that make it believable. And looking back at classic Disney, Walt's era, I never felt that when I was hearing somebody, like going back to Snow White, when I would hear her speak or hear other people speak, I never felt like it was that overdramatic. Sometimes, yes, but it was still believable to me. It still felt like these are characters that I can actually identify with or relate to or feel like, man, this is a real person, you know, versus today's stuff. I'm like, this is just so out there. Here's the thing, though. Wreck-It Ralph. I didn't feel that in Wreck-It Ralph. I felt like everybody did a pretty dang good job in that one from a voice perspective, which is probably another reason I liked it.
Yeah, it was. I was actually, because I'm not a fan of Sarah Silverman or any other work she's done, but she did a good job as Vanellope. Because that was a different difference compared to, you know, and I was really hearing some of the casting. I was like, golly, I don't know. But I think also what carries it is Alan Tudyk. And I've gotten to see him now at Planet Comic Con.
He's so good, though.
He is so versatile, what he can do with his voice. And it's not just about making a funny voice with voice actors. You've got to create a character completely with your voice and everything you do without being your body. But the way you say things, everything has to be a character. And Alan Tudyk he's one of those people who I think he is so versatile between playing live action characters and doing animated characters in Disney films and some video games. Now he's done, you know, he is awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, when he did the droid in Rogue One, I mean, I knew it was him, but even going in knowing this is Alan Tudyk, I still had a hard time seeing his face while I was listening to this droid talk. I'm like, dang, he was so good with that.
Yes.
And that was a pretty basic role, to be honest, compared to other roles he's done. So, yeah.
But it was a great role. He made that role something special.
He was the star of that movie. I mean, the whole movie was great, but he was the star.
because he made it so you did. I thought I was going to cry when okay, spoilers.
Once again.
You know, when his character is dying and he's a machine, but you felt like he was such a character and you love the character that when you see him dying, you're heartbroken a little bit.
So maybe we're onto something here. Maybe if Disney can create a non-real character and make you fall in love with it to the point where you believe it's real and you cry if they die or anything else, which goes to animation. These are not real characters, right? You know, animals don't really talk. Well, some do. Anyway, so you know what I'm saying, though? Like, if they can create that where you connect with the character so much, that's powerful.
Yeah. And Pixar, I think, still is able to do such a thing. Pixar, every time you go into a Pixar movie for the first time, just bring your tissues. They are so good at that still. And that's why John Lasseter, I think he really has learned a lot of things from Walt's storytelling and some of the stuff that he's done. And some of those team at Pixar, they seem to know how to get to you. And what I want to see change, and this is something I've even got listed on one of the things, that this is a problem. I blame the Oscars, the Academy, for part of the problem of why animation now we're getting such junky ones. Beauty and the Beast, the first animated film ever to be nominated for Best Picture. An animated film being treated the same as anything else being put out by Hollywood. Any other film, it's kept up there. What's the Academy do? They say, we can't pick that one. It's animated. And they snubbed it.
Yeah.
Because it was a better movie than Silence of the Lambs, which did win that year. And so they, because of Beauty and the Beast, they created a separate field for best animated feature. They officially took a movie that should be, you know, a type of film that should be treated as something, hey, this is for everybody. And they put it in an area. It's like, well, these are kids' films.
Yeah.
And so now we have Disney feeling like they have to make that. That's what they do. They make kids' films, which might be part of the reason why they are so heavy-handed sometimes with a message, because they have to talk down to a kid or something.
Yeah.
Maybe they feel they have to do that instead of making films that, you know, because heck, I'm a big kid, so I'm still enjoying them. But when you look, I mean, Beauty and the Beast was something that adults could enjoy as well.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of those classic Disney animation, they're very grown up. I mean, sure, kids are going to love them, but the adults loved it too. Adults were crying at Snow White.
Yeah.
Adults were crying at Dumbo.
Here's the thing, though. They didn't make kids' movies back then. They didn't have to talk down to kids back then.
Right.
If you got it, great. If you didn't, well, you'll get it when you're a little older.
They'll find a way to, it'll appeal to you at whatever age. And so you'll come back and watch it again. Because heck, even Star Wars, when I was a kid, I didn't quite get everything. The more I've watched it, the older I get, you know, you get more out of it. You understand more and you're just, wow, your mind is blown. Because although George Lucas said he made Star Wars for 12-year-olds, it was universal. Everybody could enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that's what Disney was like.
So,
and now...
Okay, so speaking modern, though, did you like the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast?
Well, I liked it, but I didn't love it.
Yeah.
That is my favorite animated Disney film. I adore that picture. And so when I did a live-action, I must say I was nervous. I'm like, oh, please don't mess this up. But when we got to see those first images of the interior of the castle and they played some of the score on piano, I was like, okay, I'm interested. And I did enjoy it, but I think I enjoyed it for the story's sake. It's a good story, and getting a little bit of extra details of the Beast was kind of nice. Personally, I would rather have them adapted the Broadway musical, because some of the songs of the Broadway musical is fantastic, and we didn't get any of those new songs. So a little disappointed, but overall, not bad. And I have, for the most part, other than Maleficent, which I absolutely hated that one. But for the most of the part, I have enjoyed these live-action adaptations. You know, and because I'm still having fun, but it mainly might be the nostalgia of I love the animated one. So here's a live action. And then when they stay pretty faithful, but maybe expand on the story, I end up enjoying it.
Yeah.
So they really can't stray away, because that might be why I hated Maleficent. It strayed way too far in the opposite direction of Sleeping Beauty.
Although I have to tell you, you're right. You know, if you have like a pretty high not even an expectation, but like, you know, it's going to take a lot to beat the original animated Beauty and the Beast, you know, for you, right? I didn't have that, and I loved this new reboot. Like, I thought it was fantastic, but you're right. It didn't stray really from, you know, the original thing. It was a modern adaptation, but at the same time, it's like it stayed pretty true to the story. I'm with you. I couldn't stand Maleficent. That drove me crazy. There were so many psychotic scenes in there, you know, her staring all the time, and I'm like, you're creepy. No, I didn't like it, though. It was weird.
They turned a great Disney villain into a jealous ex-girlfriend.
So, and it was like, what? I know.
It
felt
like
people
somebody
that
had
movie.
Had a bad one-night stand and then wrote the script the next day.
With a hangover.
With a hangover, yeah.
Yeah, it was, I know people liked it, but I was just like, no, that was not for me, man. I remember we saw it in the theater, and even, it was so funny because at one point even Sarah said, I said something about Maleficent. She goes, oh, I didn't see that. Like, yeah, we did. We saw it in the theater. She goes, oh, must not have liked it. Like, no, we didn't. Oh, it's funny. Yeah,
that I think is probably one of the few times I left a movie theater fuming. I was so mad at how badly they'd done that story. And, you know, Beauty and the Beast, like I said, I liked it. I think I need to watch it again because I really did like it.
Yeah.
But I'm still so faithful to the animated. And I really liked what they did with the Jungle Book. Cinderella, I liked what they did with that one. We'll see, what else have they done live action now? Cinderella. I guess it's about all of it.
Which,
did you see the live action Cinderella? It's actually pretty good.
I haven't seen the new Cinderella, and I haven't seen the new Jungle Book. I actually meant to go watch that, and that got off my radar. And I love the original too.
Really exciting, because they took what you knew from the animated and they added a little bit more stories from the book.
Nice.
And so it was really cool, and it stayed very faithful. So I'm pretty confident that they can do some pretty good stuff with whatever they're doing. Eventually, they're probably going to kill something. But it's even being able to tap in that nostalgia and my love for stuff that gets me excited. Have you seen the teaser for Christopher Robin?
You know, I've not, but I am excited about that one.
See, I didn't know about this. I knew there was a film, and it's already out on Vudu. You can buy it digitally. That's about A.A. Milne and writing the book. And it's something titled something, something Christopher Robin. So I did not know about this film because it kind of got overshadowed.
Yeah.
But I watched the teaser this week and they managed to tap into my nostalgia and love for the original Winnie the Pooh and getting to see a live action teddy bear, Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Even briefly, it was enough to make I got excited.
Nice. Yeah. I've seen the posters is all, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah, see, they can seem to tap into that nostalgia, and part of, you know, with filmmaking, you want to make guaranteed moneymakers when you're becoming a movie factory, unfortunately, and tapping into stuff that we're familiar with does tend to draw in an audience, which I think is part of the success of Marvel is you've got all the fans of the comics because we're familiar with these characters. That's the same thing with Star Wars. We're kind of familiar with this universe, so they've already got an instant audience.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not they make a good movie with that instant audience is a completely different matter. But that's, I think, what Disney's doing is they're spending a lot of time with a pre-made audience, even though, I mean, it is still part of the formula. Like with Wrinkle in Time coming out, they've already got an audience for people who love those books. I haven't read it. We bought a copy of it.
Fantastic.
Heather's going to read it.
Yeah.
I want to read it. I'm going to see the movie first.
Good.
But they've got a pre-made audience, but yet that is still them adapting something. So it's still, I think, Disney doing what they do best.
Sure. That is a pre-made audience, but I think they did a really poor movie years ago. I never even saw it, but from what I remember,
early 2000s.
It was a, like just a terrible B-rate movie. But no, the book was fantastic. And I got to tell you that, at least as to my knowledge, that book was one of the leading pioneers to basically create what a lot of sci-fi does now today. You know, with their travel, basically. I don't want to give too much away if you haven't seen it, but.
Yeah, especially with the, it looks like they're talking a lot about, you know, alternate universes and stuff like that, which is very much a big thing for modern sci-fi. You get a lot of that these days, too.
Yeah, but I mean, that book was written a long time ago.
Yeah, in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
I had to do
it. No, it is good, and I appreciate that they're doing that. I'm excited to go see that one, but I got to tell you, I am a little nervous because the book, it's the same kind of thing. Like you create the world in your mind, you know, or like you go to see Beauty and the Beast animated first, and then you come in with this. Well, this is how I felt when I first experienced it. So there's no way it's going to be the same. So I'm trying to go in with an open mind. Same with like Ready Player One, and same with all those. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing too is you're right. The built-in audience, which means reboots and sequels. It's pretty much why we're seeing so many of those is because there's an audience. They can guarantee they're going to make money. Are we getting tired of it yet? Are we getting tired of the superhero, you know, genre right now? Are we getting tired of seeing the same movies rebooted, you know, or the 56th sequel, you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I know some people are already weary of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Personally, I'm still loving it. I'm having fun. Yeah. Because when I go to a movie, that's my whole thing. I just want to entertain. I want to shut my brain off for a little bit and just have some fun.
Yeah.
Which might be like you were saying once on your show with The Last Jedi. That's probably why I enjoyed it my first time because I was like, it's a Star Wars movie. Let me just kick back and have some fun.
Yes. Yep. And I did
too. It was my second viewing that I started thinking about the subtext and all the stuff. And I was like, ooh, this movie is actually really deep and it's fun.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, but that goes back to Walt's era. There weren't reboots and all that. I mean, granted, like I said, there were adaptations to books and stories that were already written. Like I mentioned, Swiss Family Robinson and, you know, 20,000 Leagues and all that. So, yes, he had already taken already written stories and adapted them. But then a lot of his original stuff, that was his thing. It might have been like Fantasia, influenced by something. But, yeah, it was his thing. And nowadays,
and the way he tell the story was definitely his style.
So are we seeing either a lazy era of movie making and storytelling, or are we seeing we're spread so thin because we're making too many freaking movies and stories that they just can't, the creativity is just out the window because they're just so busy.
And that's a valid question, because that's like the CW shows with Arrow. That's a great show.
Yep.
Then we got The Flash. Oh, great show. And it seemed like the more shows, though, that Greg Berlanti was trying to put out, the more they started to all suffer.
Yep. Absolutely.
And he got spread a little too thin. And now Disney here recently, they granted Lucasfilm is still making their own movies. Marvel Studios is still making their own movies. So Disney doesn't have complete control like that. Disney's doing Disney Studios. I mean, they're all under the Disney umbrella, but these are still separately working. But over, we have seen now Lucasfilm has just hit the gas. And because we got Rian Johnson's going to write some sort of other trilogy. We got a couple other guys going to write their own series of films. We're hitting the gas and is making as many Star Wars movies as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. Marvel seems to be doing that. But Marvel, of course, has had a plan from way ahead. Like, you know, they've had a direction they've been going with these films. And I think that has been working, as, you know, the interconnectedness.
But then plus the TV shows too.
Yeah, the TV shows being connected in. So, I mean, at least they have planned this out. And Star Wars, I feel like it's kind of got that plan, but it also feels like they're just like, oh, that's a good idea. Hey, let's make more Star Wars movies based on this idea.
Yeah.
So I worry about the future of Star Wars more than I worry about the future of Marvel films, other than, you know, people maybe get tired of superheroes after a while. That could happen. And some people maybe already are, but yeah. I don't know.
No, I agree with Star Wars.
Laziness or being spread too thin. I worry about maybe being spread too thin because you're trying to do so much. Because, you know, these animated movies, when they used to hand draw them, it took years of development.
Yeah.
And Pixar still, I think, takes a few years to really develop their films. And I'm sure Disney's still taking a lot of time with their animated films to develop them. But it does sometimes feel like they're trying to do as many as they possibly can when it comes to live action.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Pirates of the Caribbean, they pushed that a few too many films.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. There's only two of them that I really actually liked. It seems like somewhere, at least in live action, they're trying to pump out as much as they can between Marvel, Star Wars, and Disney films.
Yeah.
And the animation, I still think Pixar's still doing something right. And the Disney animation department is kind of close. But it seems like it doesn't seem like they're taking as much time to create the artisticness. And I think a part of it, they're getting maybe too dependent upon what they can do with these computers.
Yeah. Well, going back to Star Wars, you know, when they were doing puppets and, you know, sound effects with their, like in a sound effects room, you know, versus doing everything mm-hmm. CGI and digital and everything else, you know, as far as sounds. I mean, I remember when The Phantom Menace came out that it was just like, I mean, I hate to say this, but ironically, the puppets looked and felt more real than the computer CGI did. And it was like, what? And I know, you know, that was one thing I was thankful that was done with The Last Jedi, was bringing more of that back.
Yeah.
So you're right. There is something to be said about that.
Practical effects.
And, you know, I've even heard this too from designers and people that actually do this kind of stuff, that CGI should be used as touch-up. I mean, otherwise we're watching a video game.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we're laughing about, The Lion King, that they're calling a live action film. When you're like, okay, well, you don't have any humans in there. So even if you have somebody motion capturing your animals, you still have animated characters. You're just trying to make them look real. Kind of like The Jungle Book was pretty much an animated movie with one human actor, and he was acting on green screens.
Yeah. That's got to be so hard to do.
That kid did a good job, really. We're not saying that these new films are bad.
Nope.
We're just, they're missing something somewhere. Yeah.
They're not drawing me in personally. And
too much technology, perhaps?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I say the same thing about the music industry. Somebody puts out a freshman album and, you know, they've been working on it maybe through their youth. You know, it's like, I need to learn how to play. I want to write music. And, you know, your entire youth, you're spent perfecting it. And then you put out your first album and it's usually really, really good for the most part, right? Most of the time, then you get signed by a record label and things, you know, start to kind of go downhill because they've got these crazy deadlines and you got to write music faster than inspiration can come or whatever the case may be. And then, so you've got that factor too. I mean, I think there are a number of factors but I mean, we're, you know, we live in a, I want everything right now because we can get everything right now. And so, you know, if I have to wait a year, well, actually more than a year for Jessica Jones season 2, you know, I mean, shoot, I'm on to DC, forget Marvel. You know what I mean? Although it just came out, so I'm excited now. But you know what I mean? Like, I was like, come on, I want the next Star Wars movie tomorrow. I don't want to wait, you know, 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
I'm like, my gosh.
It used to be you'd have to wait 3 years
exactly.
for another Star Wars movie. Now we get one every year, whether yeah. it's Saga or something else.
I mean, shoot, the
although
first.
Although I'm still enjoying it was three. Them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I mean, don't rush.
3 years in between.
Get it done right. Don't, you know, if it's not done right, don't put it out yet.
Yeah.
And that's what they did with Rogue One. It was supposed to be released in May, and they pushed it back to December to get it right. And they did a good job.
Yeah.
So
give yourselves kudos. Times to make the best one. And there are still these great filmmakers out there who know how to do things visually to tell such a great story without, you know, and they take their time to do it properly. But I think they're almost overshadowed by all these other, you know, as fast as we could do it. And it might even be, one thing I noticed the trend, like in the 90s, you had people who were used to doing the quick paced music videos. And they started trying to direct full films, and they did a full feature length film as if it was a music video. And they, sometimes what you get is not great quality. Case in point, if you look at the original Crow film, granted, okay, this is my family friendly show and I'm talking about R-rated films, but the original Crow, I do love that movie. It is a good movie. Then you'll see the sequel, and it's directed. It was his first feature film after having done music videos all this time.
Yeah.
And it's a little silly, and it plays out like an extended music video. But it's part of that we have to be so quick. And even if you look at how stories were told, you know, even television, the cartoons we watch, you know, they took their time to tell a story. Compared to if you try to watch any of these newer cartoons, they have to do it so rapid fire because kids are so used to get everything so fast on their phones and all this stuff that it has to be hyperactivity that they don't get the time to tell a good story and just slow down a little bit.
Yeah. Case in
point. Tell the story.
Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. I mean, I thought both those movies were absolutely fantastic, but I got to tell you, they were slow. And even the new one, pleasantly surprisingly, was very slow. They took their time to tell the story. And I got to tell you, like, it was very funny sitting in the theater because, you know, there's a couple of us that are, you know, Gen Xers. And then maybe like older millennials, and we enjoyed the movie. We were engaged. And then there were others that were younger millennials or even the Gen Zers now. And they're all on their phones the whole time because I think they were yawning. It's like it's just not enough action for them. There's not enough of that. Like, go, 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 go. You know, fast twitch. That's what video games are today because that's what they grew up with. And it's almost like a drug now that if you don't get that, well, yeah, it's boring. I get it because that's what you're used to. But, I mean, we grew up with stuff that was slower. And it's funny, I go back and watch old movies and I start to fall asleep myself too because I'm not used to that anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think it almost should be required viewing for even younger people. Go back and watch Casablanca.
Yeah.
It's not action-packed, but the suspense. Have you ever seen that?
I have, yeah. It was good. I liked that one a lot.
The suspense, and it builds up tension. It takes its time. And it's like, this is what films are supposed to be like. It's the story gets you so emotionally pulled in and takes its time to carry you through this journey and this story. And if people could get more accustomed to that, because unfortunately, I think the media is what has trained us to be that way. And because now we're kind of getting that way, the media has to keep up with us.
Sure.
And that might be part of the problem with modern filmmaking and even modern Disney. It has to be so quick and rapid fire. You have to have a joke every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
That you don't have time to just slow down.
Well, you got to keep people off their social media and engaged with the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that as a joke.
They might as well have at the door of a theater. It's like, check your phone in here so you can just come in and focus on nothing else.
Yeah.
But just let us tell you a story.
You know, what's interesting is that there are times where I'll watch something and for whatever reason, I'll feel like I need to check my phone because it's like, well, I need to get to work or I need, you know what I'm saying? Like I need to do something. I don't know why I feel that, but sometimes I do. And I think, oh, that wasn't a very good story. And then I went, wait a minute. Let me go back and rewatch that with my phone down and not like just fully engaged in the story. And I realize, oh my gosh, this was fantastic. But if I'm not engaged and inserting myself into the story and allowing myself to become part of that experience and that journey, well, of course it's not as good because I'm missing it. No matter how much everyone's like, well, I'm a multitasker. No, you're not. There's no such thing. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work because something's going to get neglected.
Exactly. Statistically, there's no such thing and there's no way you can do it. You'll hear it, but you can't immerse in it.
And this actually even reminds me however many years ago that they re-released E.T. And they had a few extra scenes that they had done their little bit of computer tricks. But I still absolutely love that movie. That it is a brilliant. It is Spielberg's masterwork. Mm-hmm. And I went twice when it was re-released. And then I went early in the day, and it was just me, maybe a couple other people, because people were at work. And it was great to enjoy. And then I went a couple days later because Heather hadn't seen it since she was a little girl. I thought, well, we need to go. And somewhere behind us was a bunch of teenagers that were not engaging with the film. Yeah. They were on their phones, and they were like, boring. This movie's so boring. And just I almost wanted to get up and smack them. They were just doing all this stuff, just wasting time. If they had taken time to just sit, shut down everything, quit talking to each other, and engage in the film, they would have been taken through an incredible journey where it's this amazing film that allows you to feel the emotions of a puppet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's powerful. It's really funny because I was actually looking at like a demographic breakdown the other day. It's kind of funny because I was trying to figure out, like, you know, who are the typical listeners to The Real Brian Show? You know, anybody that does any kind of a podcast or a business, you do try to figure out those things. But they've actually come up with a new term now. And Jeremy, you and I fit into this too. We are called Xennials, which means we were born in the Gen X. Well, some of us, like, you're either born in Gen X generation. However, you associate well with the millennials because you also grew up with that. So you're a couple years away from when the millennials were born. So you might be a Gen Xer, and maybe as a kid you have like your Gen X experiences, but then later in life, like high school, college, you have the millennial experience because of technology and everything that came out. We might have been early adopters of social media. So I think in one way it's interesting, like not being a quote old fuddy-duddy, like you said, but having a perspective of seeing things from both sides to be able to say, yes, I've lived the world of social media. In fact, I was on Facebook before most people that I know. And now I hate it. But you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where I've seen both sides. Like, I've seen the cool part of social media. I've seen the cool part of technology. And now I'm starting to see the negative part. And so there's it is an interesting perspective, but it's the same way with like watching these movies. And I'm wondering, honestly, I'm wondering if you hit it where these movie makers are saying, how do we keep these people engaged? And maybe that's, and so we got to push out things so fast or else they're going to forget about us. And we got to flash things at them, you know, so it's, I mean, honestly, you know, watching Black Panther, there was a lot of action. And I thought, well, no, let me take that back. Black Panther had less action, I think, than most of the Marvel movies, now that I think about it. And I found myself yawning, interestingly. And I didn't know if that's because I wasn't engaged in the story or if that's because, oh, crap, I'm one of those, you know, that's falling prey to the I need more action kind of thing. So it wasn't that. It was another movie that I watched. Maybe it was the Justice League or something, but it was one of those ones where I felt like there was just constant stuff being like, you know, sent into our brains. And I thought, this is crazy. Like, but you've got to keep people engaged. So maybe that's part of the problem they're having with modern day stuff. Maybe that's, but you know what? Okay. So going back to modern day animation, Disney animation, I love Star Wars Rebels. Love it. It's Star Wars.
I'm working my way through like season 3. So,
but I love it. I haven't even gotten that far yet actually, but, I do. Now, granted, I knew, you know, one of the producers and, for season 1 anyway, I don't think he made it past season 1 or yeah, I think he moved on to some other stuff at that point, but you know, I just really love what they've done. I think they've told story well. I don't think they've over-exaggerated, you know, the voice acting all that much. And I think they've done a really good job of making believable characters. And that's Disney. So they're, again, Lucasfilm, but it's still Disney. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, actually, it's funny. The first season felt very kidsy. Like it was made for kids, overacting, all of that. I pushed through it because it's Star Wars. I'm going to get through this. But you're right. Second season, you're like, oh my gosh. Now I'm starting to see some incredible story. I'm seeing character development. You know, there's so much more. There's meaning behind it, and they're not having to like cram it down your throat. It's the, like you said, the subtle text and all that. I mean, so many cool things.
Yeah.
I love that.
And it's, I still think they need to get Genndy Tartakovsky to get to give him a chance to make another series and this time make it canon. Because even his short subjects, Clone Wars things that he did, that is not, unfortunately not canon.
I thought
at
Rebels
all.
Was.
Rebels, yes. Okay. If that's canon. I'm talking the Genndy Tartakovsky that he did a Clone Wars series. They were all like little 2-3 minute little episodes.
Oh, you mean the
Cartoon Network?
The true. Oh, those were phenomenal.
Those were great.
Yes.
But those are not considered canon. I'd like to see Genndy Tartakovsky get another opportunity to make a Star Wars series and then allow it to be canon.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a scene in there with Mace Windu utilizing the Force in a way that I thought, wow. And that makes perfect sense. And it should be that way. Or like, now I did see this in the Clone Wars, the new Clone Wars, where they would jump from a very long height and they would use the Force to basically slow them down and prevent them from splatting. Duh.
Yeah.
Hello. Duh.
Very cool.
Yeah. So it's been interesting, actually, how they've used animated to allow, because, I mean, that would be very expensive from a live action standpoint. From a, you know, making
with animation, hey, we can do that.
Exactly. And so I will say that there's been one huge factor to, you know, modern animation has allowed them to do what, hey, this is what it should be. And we can do that with animation. Yeah.
Well, heck, we could have done it even hand drawn too.
True. See? Oh my gosh. I know.
So yeah. They're not doing anything necessarily that couldn't be done before, other than the look on the more three-dimensional, but there are some brilliant hand-drawn stuff that brought you into a 3D area, like the not rotoscoping, but the multiplane camera. Mm. Going back to Bambi, but the opening, you're just moving through the forest. And there's so many different layers of stuff. You forget you're looking at different layers of drawings and oil paintings. It's just moving through and it seems fully dimensional and it just seems real, even though they're completely 2D. Say, even Beauty and the Beast, that opening shot, it's very 2D, but it moves in kind of in a 3D sense. And even Pinocchio, when you start a shot and it moves down and into the streets and everything's moving very realistically. And it gives that everything a sense of space.
Mm.
And even with 2Ds. And I don't see that with these 3D films, a sense of space. It's like they want to make backgrounds all like Inside Out. The backgrounds look beautiful and amazing. Wreck-It Ralph, the backgrounds look beautiful and amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they don't move in that sense of fantastic space.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I would have never thought of it like that. See, but they've done this in video games too, and I have more experience with that. But I mean, and you haven't had a chance to play this, but the art direction in Guild Wars 2, for example, is still to this day. I mean, this game is, I don't even know how many years old now.
Pretty old.
It's phenomenal. I mean, I still have yet to see modern games do what Guild Wars 2 has done. I mean, there are some, but not that many. And this, I mean, it's phenomenal. Phenomenal.
You need to play The Witcher 3.
But I mean, it's
cool. I gotta say,
when people put that in there, and you know, I don't understand like all the technical terms you're talking about with the spacing and that kind of thing, but I think I understand like how, what it feels like and what it, you know, what the experience is. And you're right about that. There's definitely something, I guess, less real, to, you know, put it plainly, about some of the modern stuff that just isn't there anymore. And again, because I know, you know, if you read a little bit about like with Guild Wars 2, for example, the time that went into it and the people they had to pay to put in artwork and that kind of thing. Oh, and not to mention, you know, the voice actors and stuff who were fantastically talented. It's money, it's time, etc. If you've got to push something out fast, you don't have that. So you do what I talk with coffee. It's good enough. It's good enough to get people to come back, but it's not fantastic.
To take it right back, like a Disney film, should have that nice handcrafted and not that factory Dunkin' Donuts, Starbucks, generic. This does boom. Hey, we got to put it out there, but have that handcrafted feel where just you can see the hands of the artist. That's what we want. I wouldn't mind if there's fingerprints on it. That's one of the things that's fun about claymation, is seeing the fingerprints of the people who are working the figures.
That's neat.
I want to see the fingerprints of the artist on these Disney films.
You know, and I like this too, because I understand that from a business standpoint, it needs to be sustainable. There needs to be, you know, enough profit that it makes sense. And sometimes you have to, you know, streamline processes and all that stuff. I understand that. But you are right that there's a call, I think, now for, I think people just want to see more of that handcrafted stuff again. I think we've been genericized, I like to make words up, so much. And, you know, we're eating government cheese now instead of a finely aged cheddar with espresso rubbed into the rind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, but we really got to wrap this up.
Sounds good.
It's been a good long conversation.
Well, thanks for having me, allowing me to chat with you on this.
And you didn't think you would be able to contribute to this.
I didn't, honestly. I was thinking, like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I'm glad this worked.
Yeah, see, I knew. See, it's movies, and you love movies, and you can still get in on this. So, alrighty, but we'll just wrap this on up. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPcast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/NeverlandPodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Blue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Yeah!
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.